was standing up. We all went to the association. All the different missionaries came together. And people were standing up and they were saying that they were from Uruguay and the Amazon and Nairobi. And then I said, I'm from McGee. And so it was a little bit different. And everybody kind of looked at me strange. My name is Paul Bernard. And I started a church or planted a church in McGee, Mississippi about 14 years ago. This was when church planting had a little bit different take than what it has right now. And I want to share with you my story because your pastor and I have the same heart. I couldn't help but just, as he talked, just grin because he's just got the same heart that I have. And where you are is such a mission field. And so I want to talk to you about that and what that looks like. So I got saved when I was 21 years old. My wife led me to Christ. She was my girlfriend at the time. And we got married and served in the church, the local church, for quite some time, and then surrendered to preach. Then I went to Eastside Baptist Church, and I began to preach there for about 2 years. It was a wonderful, wonderful situation. There were 12 people there when I got there, and they all hated each other. That was the way it was. And so it was a very difficult time, but we ended up growing, that church, and it was absolutely wonderful. And then God began to show me some things. And I want to kind of share kind of how that started, with us. So they had a parsonage right next door to the church. Okay. And so what I would do is, go out to the community and talk to people, you know, and stuff pastors are supposed to do. And so I went to one of the deacons said, you know, there's a guy that's an alcoholic, and he has been abusing his wife for 17 years. And I was like, wow, where does he live? And they said, he's renting the parsonage. And I thought, that's neat. So I went over, and I knocked on this guy's door, and I basically opened up the door. He opened up the door, and I said, hi, my name. He said, it doesn't matter. If you step foot on this property again, I'll kill you. And this is like, I'm 2 weeks in, okay? And so I did what every pastor at my age would do. I said, thank you, and I went home. I would love to tell you that I stood there and, you know, was, but I was scared to death, so I left. And so I was a kid, and so I went to the deacons, and I said, he said we wanted to just pray for him. For a while. So anyway, we just kind of moved on from that. All right. And, so one Wednesday night, I'm in the church and I'm teaching on Wednesday night, like we did every Wednesday night. And the back doors of the church, and I can still see it in my mind, it was these two wood doors, and they kicked open, and the wood, the facing on the door literally flew off of it. It was him, had kicked in the back door of the church. And so I looked down at him and I was like, we're fixing to be on the news. You know, this is one of those situations. And he screamed at the top of his lungs. He said, I found Jesus tonight. And I didn't know what to do. And so I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, wow, this is amazing. So immediately what ended up happening is I did what no Baptist ever does. And I just took off running down the aisle. And I grabbed him and I hugged him. I said, man, I'm so excited to hear. And so he came into the church and he sat down. And he sat down beside this little lady named Miss Darcy. I'll never forget her. And he was sitting, and he kept elbowing her. He's like, this is good, isn't it? Isn't this wonderful? And she was like, yes, now hush. You know, and so I ended up, you know, he kept trying his best to figure it, because he didn't have any idea what to do. I mean, it was church, and he had never been in church before in his life. He didn't have any idea what to do. And sadly, what ended up happening is he ended up leaving and never coming back into the church. And so it kind of broke my heart. And I was thinking, okay, God, I want to reach that guy. How do I reach that guy? And so years went on, and God began to show me something. And he began to show me that I needed to plant a church. So I did what I read in a book where some guy had done it. And so I said, I had no idea what I was doing. So I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll get a map. And I rolled the map out. And I said, God, show me which mountain or beach am I going to, you know? And it just kept lighting up in McGee. I just kept seeing McGee, and I thought, Lord, there's no way. You know, there's that verse that no prophet, you know, has honor in his own hometown. I'm not, you know, they're not going to like me there. And besides that, there are 150 churches in that county, 45 Southern Baptist churches in that county. And so what in the world? So I ran from it for about a year and then finally gave into it and said, okay, God, if that's what you want me to do, I'll plant a church. And so went to the my pastor and I said, I want to plant a church. And he said, what do you want me to do about it? I said, I don't know. I just thought you might know something because I don't know anything. So then he said, well, let's go talk to the associational director. So we went to the associational director, and the associational director said, what do you want me to do? I said, I don't know, guys. I don't know what I'm doing, and you're supposed to be, like, helping me. So I said, well, let's go to the state convention. And I said, if the state convention says they don't know what they're doing, I'm just going to do something. I don't know what I'm going to do. So I went to the state convention. This is a true story. This is how this happened. I went to the state convention, and the guy that was in there, a great guy, but they're... thought process on church planning was a lot different back then. And I said, I want to plant a church. And he said, do you feel called? I said, yes. He said, here are some VCR tapes. Go watch them. Here's $50,000. Go plant a church. And I said, just like that. I'm just going to walk out of here now, right? And it blew my mind. And so I left. I watched the VCR tapes, and they were hilarious. And I watched them, and I'm thinking, there's no way in the world. So let me explain to you how the Baptist thought process of church planning was back in the year 2002, 2001. This was when South Haven in North Mississippi was the fastest growing town in the United States. Everybody was leaving Memphis. Hernando was blowing up, Olive Branch, South Haven, all these towns were blowing up. And so they had an influx of people that was huge. And so what they did was they said, we have too many people, not enough churches. And so they planted churches up there in the north, and they used a model of attraction. And the attraction model says that you build a church, and when you build it, you make it what it needs to be, and you attract people to the church. And so I knew that I'm in McGee, Mississippi. And they said, you need to market, you need to put billboards, you need to put signs everywhere, you need to advertise with your own website, you need to do all these different things, you need to get on a radio station if you got a radio. I was like, we don't have a radio station. And then he said this, he said, so go get them. And so I knew I couldn't do that. And the reason why is because in a rural community, all I would do was get people that were mad at their church coming to it. And God called me to reach unchurched lost people, and nobody else. And so we didn't know what to do. And so there was no model. Nobody had ever done it. We'd never read a book on rural church planting in Mississippi of all places. And so we didn't know what to do. And I got this friend of mine said, I'd like to join you and work with you on this. And I said, okay, great. So we're going to meet in a living room. So we go to a living room, and our very first church service, I'll never forget this, it was me, my wife, and my two children. No, one child, one wasn't born yet. Him, his wife, and two children. And I preached to them after I led them in worship with a guitar. And then I preached, and then we took up an offering. I think there was like $7 total that day. But it was the greatest day Overflow Church, which is the name of our church, has ever had. 100% of the people joined the church that Sunday. I mean, it was just wide open. Everybody joined the church that Sunday. So, and a funny thing about that is the next week I had to be out, okay? And because I had to be out, my whole family was with me, and so he preached the gospel to his wife and two kids the next day, because that's where we always said, oh, I was going to preach the gospel. And so we kept moving forward. Well, time went on, and we just kept, it was just us, our two families. And I had a friend of mine, that when I was working construction, that's what I did before I surrendered into ministry. I was working construction, and he was arrested for trafficking crystal meth across state lines. And so he went to jail, and he did like 4 years. Well, he wrote me a letter from jail, and he said, I heard you're a preacher now. And I said, yeah, I am. And he said, okay, I'm going to be getting out soon. I'm going to come see you. I was like, okay, that's fine. So I never expected that to happen. So he gets out. He gets on house arrest. And he says, I can come to your church. Where is it? And I said, well, it's at this guy's house. And he goes, is it a church? I said, yes, it's a church. It's just weird looking. And he said, okay. He said, do you have something I can sign saying that I've been there? And I was like, what do you mean? He said, you need something. So that's why we got letterhead in our church. We got letterhead. And so we had letterhead, and he came in, and I signed it. And that's all the Mississippi Department of Correction needs is letterhead and somebody to sign it. So I signed it and I sent it to They sent it off with him. Well, he had gotten saved, and he was really living for God, but people didn't know that. And so when they found out he was back in town, people would go to buy drugs from him. Okay, and instead of selling them drugs, he began to bring them to church. And so this, and guys, I want to go ahead and tell you as a preface, I've never done drugs. I've never drank. I have been a good Baptist all my life. Sheltered, naive. And so he comes in with, and so the front row of Overflow Church was the dealer and all the junkies. That was our church. And I didn't know what to do. And so I was looking at these people, and we had one guy come in one time, and then the most awful thing ever started to happen. They begin to invite their friends. And you know what their friends are like. And so I go to the Lord. I'm like, Lord, there's no way this is happening, because I don't know what to do with these people. They're not like me. And so we begin to pour into as much as we could. Had one guy one day was coming off of something, and he was, you know, feeling like this real. And I didn't know what was wrong with him. And I kept looking at Phil, who's the guy that came from prison that obviously brought this crowd. And so I looked at him. I was like, what's he doing? He said he's coming off of something. By that time, the guy stood up and took his shirt off. This is in church. And I just looked at him, and I grew up in church. And I said, you don't do that in church. And he goes, I'm sorry, it's hot in here. I said, I'll turn on the air conditioner. You know, don't take your shirt off. So this is what Overflow Church is. And we began to grow to about 20 or 30. And all of them are drug addicts. All of them are. And so we began to be known in the community as the drug church. And everybody called us the drug church. Why? Because everybody that went to our church was on drugs. And the funny thing is that we had this guy named Brian that he was unchurched, but he started coming. He was not on drugs. He started coming to our church. And his mom, I saw her in Walmart one day, and she said, I said, hey, did you know Brian's been coming to our church? And she went, no, I did not know he was on drugs. And I said, he's not on drugs. Now, we have normal people. There's like five of them. But we had like 40 people, and then eventually it started growing and growing and growing, and got to about 41. We're in the living room still. And so we said, we've got to go to an office complex or something. So we couldn't afford anything, because people on drugs generally don't manage their money well. So even if they do tithe, there's nothing to tithe. So we had no money. And so I'm using the convention money that's coming in to run the ministry. And so we move into this little office complex, and we begin to grow. And this is something I found out, and you might know this. People of that culture, for some strange reason, have a lot of kids. But like, all of them had like five. And they all came. We had more children than we had adults. And so we had to have somebody to teach the children. And so we didn't know what we were doing. And so I was like, Lord, look at, okay, I have these conversations with God. And I was like, Lord, look at these people. Who's going to teach the children? And so I began to pray that God send me somebody to teach the children. And about this time, this girl who was an addict or ex-addict, she had gotten saved and was brand new Christian, didn't know anything about the Bible. God said, her. I was like, no, Lord, no. See, Lord, my daughter's in that class. Not going to happen, you know, because why? Because you know, you don't teach a class unless you know the Bible. This is a bunch of preschoolers. She's not ruining my daughter's life. So God just kept throwing her in my face. And I was like, well, okay, I'll fine. So I went to her. I said, you know, Melanie, I want you to teach the children. She said, teach? I don't know anything about the Bible. I said, I know. I told him. I told him that too. But at the same time, we've got to do something. We've got to work through this. And so I said, all you got to do is read this material. It's just a story. You know what God did in your life. Just read the material. Read it to the kids. And she said, okay, I'll do it. So, true story, I went and backed up to the back of the door, listening, because I knew it was just going to go crazy wrong. So the first thing she did was she got in there, it was about 12 kids, and she said, everybody sit down and be quiet. And I said, I told you, Lord, I told you, I told you, I told you. So I just stood there, and I didn't go in yet, but I was fixing to have to go in there and help. And she said, I'm going to tell you something. And you're not going to believe me, but it's true. And she said, there was a man in the Bible that disobeyed a king because God told him
not to do what the king said do. And so he got thrown into a pit with lions. And those kids were like, and she went, and God closed their mouths where they could not eat him. And they went, and she went, I know, right? She said, that's the craziest thing you've ever heard. She said, isn't our God awesome? And then I saw something. She was relating to the Bible in a brand new way that so many of us have lost that fervor for. And she had it, and those kids were hook, line, and sinker listening to everything she said, because to her it was amazing that because this man disobeyed and was punished, that God protected him. So we should always obey God. These are preschoolers. And to this day, we have several kids. She is our children's minister at our church. Her name is Melanie. And a really neat thing, the man, Phil, it's his daughter. And she was a drug addict that just followed her dad. And so that whole family has been changed. And so we began to grow. And so God began to show us all sorts of things. And we get to see all sorts of people coming in and all shapes and sizes come in. And all of them are being invited to church by friends. To this day, Overflow Church does not advertise its start times, because we don't want anybody to hear about us or read about us and come. We want somebody in our church to invite you. Why? Because that guarantees that you're going to reach the lost culture that you came out of. And so it started happening. They began to invite their friends, and they began to invite their friends, and we got up to about 50 people. And that's when God, we kind of went into a dark time. We had 50 people after year three. Well, at this time, there were about 8 of us that were planting churches. And up north, they had 400 and 500. And so I would get the call. How many do you have? I said, 50. They said, well, it's been 3 years. And I was like, I don't know what to tell you. And they said, are you marketing? I said, no, you can't do that here. So we just kept plugging along and plugging along. So year four, we had 51. Year five, we had 50. Year six, it went down into the 40s. Year seven, we had 50. And at this point, I'm ready to just say, look, this is not my thing. Because this is McGee, all right? There are 27,000 people in the entire county, all right? 5,000 people in McGee. We got 50. That's 1%. I mean, what are we doing? And so I told God, I said, all right, God, what do you want me to do? And so then God laid on my heart, and this is so huge for anybody that's trying to start a ministry. God said, if I give you 50 people for the rest of your life, you pour into those people like there's no tomorrow, because that's your job. That's what I've called you to do. So I began to pour into these 50 people. Then something began to happen. By me pouring into these people, they started inviting again. So in 4 months' time, we went from 50 to 250. We went from 250 in 6 months' time from that point to 350. A year later, we had 450. Right now, Overflow Church has 3 services, and we have around 800 people coming. And this is the crazy part. It's still that culture. Why? Because we figured out how to reach lost people. And that's what I want to share with you today, because this is the neat thing. And I know some of you guys, we were just talking about missions overseas and so many different things, but there's a mission field. I'm looking at it through those back doors. Okay, you can turn this way, and you can see the mission field. And so what I want to inspire you and challenge you is to understand that missions are all over the world, and we are called to go all over the world. But we are also to call to our own mission right here, right now. And so we begin to reach these people, and we have all kind of things. And this is the thing I've noticed about the culture that you have to understand. When you reach that culture, they don't know what to do in church. They just don't know what to do. So I'm the master at preaching around distraction. The master at preaching around distraction. You know, some people have a baby, and you know what they're supposed to do. And that baby's just screaming. What do? You take the baby out, right? This kid is screaming his head off, and everybody's looking. And she gets up, and I'm like, well, praise Jesus. She's taking the child out,
and she begins to walk up and down the aisles, patting the baby. And I'm like, what? They don't know. They do not know. And so what do we say? She's hearing the gospel. I don't really care what she does. We had a guy come in one time. He's just drunk. I mean, drunk. Smells, and he comes in and he sits down. And true story, he just keeps falling over. And so we had to go in. I had to put somebody beside him, a true servant of God, beside him to keep propping him up. So this guy comes in. He's got a suit and he's got a tie on, which means either he's a preacher coming to spy on us or he has no idea what we are. So he comes in and he sits down behind this drunk person. And so I say, sir, can I talk to you just a second? And he said, yeah. So he got up and he came over to me. I said, I don't know if you've noticed, but the guy in front of you is wasted. Okay? He is wasted. And he said, yeah, I thought something might be wrong. And I said, if that offends you in any way, would you let me know? And he said, yes, absolutely. So I can tell you to move somewhere else. Because I want you to do that, I can't ask him to move. And I don't want to offend you. He's who we're after. And he's hearing the gospel. So that's where we want to be. That's who we want to reach out to. And he just looked at me and he was like, wow. He didn't stay very much longer after that because it's very, very difficult. Why? Because sometimes cultures have a hard time coming together. Well, I'm talking to your pastor. And I hadn't said this in any other church. Not that any other church has been bad or wrong. But I'm extremely encouraged that you guys have a culture that comes to this church that aren't necessarily like you or like churched people. That is so impressive because it is very difficult to do. And so as you reach people, I'm going to talk just a few minutes about that in just a few minutes, about how to reach those people that's so, so huge. But our church began to grow. We started to see things that you would not believe. We started to see people got saved like crazy. We started to see, because they were all lost people, right now in our church, we have more people coming to our church than we do members. Why? Because that's our mission field. It's still out there. We're trying to reach those people. And so we found out there are several things that don't work. So God began to introduce me to something. We had a kid who was going to our church, and he had gotten high. He was about 18 years old. He had gotten high and went out to the community and stole about $6,000 worth of things from people. Well, he got caught, and his mom came to me, and she wasn't, you know, didn't have the best life ever. And so she came to me, and she said, you know, Zach is in jail. Would you mind going and seeing him? And I was, you know, y'all remember where I come from, okay? And so I said, no, absolutely not. Why? Because my mama said, don't ever go to the jail, okay? Ever. There's bad people in there. You'll get killed. It's just a horrible place to go. And so his mama begged, and I was like, fine, I'll go to the jail. So went into the jail, scared to death, walked in there, naive. I'm looking at everybody. I'm waiting for somebody to jump out and just stab me to death or shank me or whatever it's called. And so I'm walking through there, and I see this kid. And he's sitting there, and I walk over to him. And he said this, it just broke my heart. He was 18 years old. He said, I've told him what I stole. I've told him where it is. Would you tell my mom to come and get me? That was how much he had processed it. And so I said, son, I want you to listen to me very carefully. You're going to do years in prison. Years. He fell apart. Like, no, I can't do that. You don't understand. I can't do. So I just hugged him. And he's weeping. And this guy, this other inmate who's in an orange jumpsuit, comes over to me and puts his hand on me and says, I think he thought I was his brother. And he says, it's okay, I'm going to pray for you. And I thought, no, I'm the one. No, that's weird. You don't pray for the preacher if you're a prisoner, you know. And so he began to pray, and then other inmates began to come around and pray. And then they asked me, they said, would you come and teach the Bible in the jail? And I was like, no way am I going to do that. And so God began to just nail me constantly. And so finally I went to the jail, and we began a Bible study in jail. It was the greatest thing I've ever done. It was so much fun and learning so much about the people in my church. I went to the jail and got educated, okay? And so I'm in this jail, and the church is growing in the jail. People are getting saved, and we're actually having the opportunity to talk to people about salvation in a way that it's not jailhouse salvation where everybody gets saved all the time. It's actually discipling those people. And so it was really, really neat. So one day, just to tell you this little story, it didn't work out too well for me. In church, they had in jail church, they have this thing called a church brawl. Okay? You call it a business meeting. All right? Get it? That was a joke. All right. So anyway, this is what happened literally. People come out to church so that they can fight. Okay, so they sit, they listen to the sermon, and then after they've heard the gospel, and I pray, and I say amen, the punches started. People just started punching each other and jumping on each other, and there was this jailer or warden that came in. He was brand new, and he was scared to death, I think, and he had this mace bottle, one of those bear spray things, and he pulls it out, and he just starts doing this. Okay, now, I look up and I see liquid. It gets on my face and in my eyes. So I've been maced in prison, okay? This is the all-time low in my ministry, all right? I'm maced in prison. And so I basically fell to my knees and I couldn't see. And about that time, I had two guys. All I could feel was really two hands. I assume it was two guys or one huge guy. But they picked me up, threw me into a cell, and slammed the door. And I thought, I'm a martyr. Yeah, I'm fixing to die right now. This is it. The inmates put their hands on me and said, "Preacher, just sit right here. I know you can't see, but you're going to be fine. We're going to keep you here until everything settles down." The prisoners had my back. And then all of a sudden, God showed me that His Spirit was moving in that place. To this day, we're in three different jails and four prisons that our church goes into. Ministers in prison ministry. It's the greatest thing ever. We now also have a house that's a transition house that when people come out of prison, they get to live there and we get them some money and they get them a job and get them on their feet so they can be productive in life. It is the most wonderful, exciting thing that I've ever been a part of, and I never knew it was going to be like this. Church planting in the state of Mississippi is taking a hard turn. And the turn that it's taking is that we're getting away completely from attractional church planting. Okay, and let me tell you why we're doing that. We're doing that because if we're going to reach the lost people of the culture that are in this area, we have to go to them. Okay, now I want to share something with you. And I don't have my stance on my Bible, but I've memorized this verse. Matthew 9. 37 says this, "The harvest is plentiful." Your translation might say, "The harvest is white, it's ready, but the laborers are few. So pray to the Lord of the harvest that He might send laborers." Okay? Now, how many of you have ever planted a garden? Are most of the people in here have planted a garden or had a plant of some sort that produced fruit? Okay? So we're going to do something a little bit different. All right? This year, if you've already got your garden, it's probably coming up. There are some things that are starting to produce maybe a little bit, and maybe a little bit further down the line, they're going to produce more. But this is what I want you to do. I want you to go get a bucket, all right? Some people have a pretty basket. At my house, we had a bucket. So we have a bucket, and I want you to get that bucket, and I want you to paint it. Okay, just paint the bucket a pretty green. And once you get glitter, my daughter has tons of it, you just shove glitter all over the outside of it, and then you put a nice handle that's rubber and cushioned so that you can carry it easily. Right? Because it's so beautiful, I want you to hold it up and I want you to look at that garden and I want you to say, "Fruit, jump in." So let me ask you a question. What do you think is going to happen? You're going to look like a, you know, and they're going to, it is, it's going to get tired. And what's going to jump in? Nothing. Do you understand this is how churches operate in our culture today? Is we say, we're going to change our music. We're going to change the look. We're going to have this program. We're going to have that program. Why? Because we're going to make our church look so good that those people out there in the harvest are going to want to jump in. The problem is, they're not going to. My generation is the last generation that says we go to church because it's the right thing to do. If we get a chance. That's where my generation is. My son's generation don't want it. don't care. Church has no meaning to them. I heard an illustration the other day, and I want to share this with you. If I wanted to fly from New Orleans to Charlotte, North Carolina, what would I do? Well, it's simple. I'd go shopping, right? I'd get on Travelocity or something like that, and I would go look for buy tickets. Talk to a travel agent, however you do it, and go buy tickets. And the way I would find out which tickets I wanted or which airline I wanted to fly is I would find out what they offered in as far as seating, what they offered as far as trip time, layover, cost, all of these different things. The airlines know that I am looking for somewhere to fly. So they put their website and they advertise because I'm going to fly. Now, I want you to picture what the airlines would have to do if they wanted to reach people that did not want to fly. Would you just put your website like it needed to be? Would you change your company? No, you would literally have to go and talk people into wanting to fly. You see, you could no longer do it from in-house as if you're in need. You would have to go out and sell again. You would have to go out and understand something. In the church, selling for us, and that terminology means we would have to reach out of our walls. And so how do you do that? Well, there are so many different things you can do. There's one number one rule at Overflow Church. Number one rule. Never, ever, ever invite somebody to church. And you go, now that's just a horrible outreach plan. So you want to grow a church, don't invite anybody. All right? And let me tell you why. Because this culture knows you, they know what you're after, and they know what you want. So somebody would have a barbecue, right? They would have a barbecue in a place that is low income. That's what churches like to do a lot of times. Multifamily housing. We'll go into that place. We'll do a block party. And I think you guys have done that. Throw block parties and that sort of thing. And they go, why do you do this? To invite you to church. You have an agenda. You don't care about me. So we always tell people this. Show people you love them. Show people the love of Christ in your life. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to ask you where you go to church. Why? Because you're forming relationships with them. And I always tell people this, and I know you guys understand what this looks like. Evangelism today looks like I'm not comfortable sharing my faith with you, but we pay a guy that is. And so if you'll come to church, he'll spread the gospel for you. So we tell people this, if you're not ready to share your faith, then you're not ready to invite to church. We want you to share your faith. We want you to grow in your relationship with people. Why? Because everybody needs relationships. How many of you know about Facebook, right? And you got texting and all of this stuff, and it has destroyed communication levels. It has. My son, and I'm not abusive, but I almost destroyed him. He asked a girl out over a text message. And so I called the girl and said I would not go out with him. Right, he cannot communicate. He's a loser, obviously. So this is what happens, all right? So what happens to this generation? What happens to this generation? This generation is constantly, you know this, you walk into a restaurant, it looks like everybody's praying, right? Because they're all looking down at their phones, every one of them. This generation has lost what it means to be relational. But now this is the trick, and this is so good. We are wired by God, our Creator, to be relational. So you know what I know? Millennials, Generation Z, these young people that are coming up, they are longing for relationship, and they don't even know it. So how are you going to reach them? Through relationships. Yeah, you're going to have to get out there and get to know somebody, and then walk with that person. And it's so neat that at Overflow, we don't have big outreach plans. We just don't. Why? Because it's a way of life. We're just befriending people. Not only that, we kind of cheat at outreach. We do. We cheat. It's not fair. It's almost like we hunt over a baited field. Okay, let me explain to you how we do this. I think it was last year or 2 years ago, and I've never concreted it. I should do that before I speak again. But we spent 60% of our budget helping people. We spent $120,000 helping people. Now, that's putting people in rehab. That's funding them to go through a long-term, six-month, faith-based place where they get Jesus for 6 months every day. And we fund it. It doesn't cost them a dime. We pay utility bills. We pay, food. We buy gas for people. We fix up houses for people. Why? Because we know that that's how you form relationships with people. And you know what? We get taken advantage of a lot. And so we say, take advantage of us. I just bought an opportunity to share the gospel with you. And so I will spend $1,000, and out of the 30 people that we've helped with that $1,000, I might get one I have a relationship with that comes to know Christ. $1,000, one soul. It's not even a question. I'm a Christian, right? And so that's what we're supposed to do. So we help people with our, finances. Why? Because that's where our heart is. And the Bible says where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. And so in our church, we have three different services, and it's full of people that have no idea what church is. We have certain people that are in our church that are, they're mentally challenged, like literally mentally challenged. They've been on drugs so long that the culture calls it burn up. They're mentally just not there. So we have people that walk with them, like in the church service, so that they get to where they're, they're just like, hey, man, it's okay, let's do this. Just kind of hang out with them. Why? Because we're going to make every effort possible. Another way that we do things, and people disagree with this tremendously, is our lights in our sanctuary are really low. And people say, why do you do that? Because we want people to be able to slip in, sit down, and slip out, and nobody notice them. Now, for church thought processes, right, that's like, you got to make them feel welcome. No, you've got to let them know it's a safe place to come. But we have people that are set up all throughout our sanctuary that when they see that person, they go, okay. And the next time they come, they'll walk by, hey, how are you? I saw you last week. They're watching. But we let them come in and just experience that church is not a bad thing. That it's not this thing that they've placed up in their head. That they've built up. Our church does foreign missions like you would not believe. We've planted 17 churches in Kenya, Africa. We've built an orphanage in Africa. And we train pastors in Africa. And we go there constantly. One of the things, and I told this to somebody else, one of the things that we have found out, that it is very difficult to get a felon a passport. That is our number one challenge in missions, foreign missions, is that felons can't get passports. But we found out a way to do it. Okay, you can get felons' passports, okay? You just have to know the right people. And so we have people that do missions there. We've got people that go to missions in Peru, people that do missions in Maryland and in Baltimore, in Mexico. They're India is another place that we go, Bangladesh, all of these different places. And these are outcasts, so to speak, of society going and doing these missions. We had a guy one time, his name was Robert, I believe, but he is not with us anymore. He's moved. He was got caught up on some old charges, and so he got arrested and had to do time. He's going to come back. But this is what he had going on, and he started this thing. So we're at this cookout thing where all our churches kind of getting together, and he's got a tattoo on his arm. By the way, everybody in our church besides me and my wife have tattoos. It's just the way it is. So he has a tattoo on his arm, and it's a naked lady. Okay? And he's wearing a tank top, and I don't want to get graphic, but it is a very good tattoo artist, okay? And so he's got this tattoo on him. He's just walking around. So people are coming up to me going, man, you got to tell that guy. You got to tell that guy to cover that up. And I was like, okay. So I was like, dude, look, you need to understand. It's nothing to do with tattoos. It's the fact that, he said, you know what? I forgot about it. I hadn't even thought about it. So he covered it up on his arm, and he walked around with a shirt over his shoulder the rest of the day. And it was so hot. So he comes up to me after the worship or the time, and he says, I got an idea. I said, okay, what is it? He said, what if for free we covered up offensive things on people with tattoos? And I said, let me just get this straight. In the Baptist church, you want to start a tattoo ministry.
He said, yes. And I said, absolutely not. Okay? Well, guess what? He did it anyway. Okay? And I'm going to tell you something. There were people that had satanic markings on their arms that he covered up with Christian stuff. Now, I don't know how you feel about tattoos, but they're already there. Okay? He put clothes on ladies. He did. He did all of these. It was a great thing. And so I hadn't told this to anybody else, but when he got picked up to go to prison, he told me, he said, okay, you got to send me all the material you can. He said, I've got 7 months. I've got to reach these people. I had a lady one time that was in the jail ministry, and this was amazing. And she got picked up on old charges once again. And so she said, look, I've got to go to jail for a little while. I'm going to be fine. God's going to use it. So she calls me from jail, and I had to change my phone number because somehow or another it got on the wall of the jail. And so she calls me. She said, Brother Paul, this is Lisa. And I was like, okay, and that's how they do collect. And so I answered it, and I took the collect call, and I said, this is Lisa. And I said, okay, Lisa, what's going on? Are you okay? She said, yeah, I'm doing good. She said, they're supposed to let me out Thursday, and I was wondering if there was something you could do about that. And I told her, I said, Lisa, we don't do that. We don't handle legal fees. We don't. That's one of the things we don't do. We believe in consequences for sin, and we believe that God's with you through it. We have a saying at Overflow Church, you deserve it, but God's with you through it. Okay? And so I said, no, you're not listening. If they will let me stay until Monday, I've got 3 girls in this prison I can get. I know I can. I said, I don't know. I'll try. So I called the sheriff and I said, Sheriff, I got the craziest thing I want to ask you. I told him the situation. He said, son, he's an older gentleman. No, son, no, we're not keeping her for 3 more days. I was like, okay. So I had to call her and it broke her heart. 2 of the girls got saved before she got out on Thursday. But the one didn't. So it's that kind of thought process. These people are not scared to go back into that culture and bring those people. But I'm going to tell you something. There are so many places out there where there are cultures that we're not reaching, that we need a person that is called by God to reach that people group or that culture to go into these neighborhoods and begin a mission of a church. Now the problem is, what most people see church planting as this guy wanted to come in because he's angry at the church. Well, what's happened is, me and about 6 of my friends have gotten together and we formed this network called the 242 Network. It's based off Acts chapter 2, verse 42. And we assess church planters, meaning they have to go through rigorous testing, an interview process. Then we train them for 6 months, and then they go and they plant the church, and we walk with them for 2 years after that. Okay? To get funding, you remember the story how I told you that I walked in and they gave me $50,000? To get funding from the Margaret Lackey State Mission Cooperative Program, which is where all of that comes from, they have to first go through the assessment. This year we have assessed 9 people. 2 of them passed. Why? Because what we're finding out is that people have been coming through the church planting process angry at church, mad at the way it's doing things, and want to start their own. And no, we're not doing that. And we also ensure, after they have been trained through this whole process and as we walk with them, that they are not to get church people. They are to get lost people. And so we walk with them and we hold them accountable. And we give them ideas, like my church. To join our church, you have to serve in a homeless shelter for 2 days. You have to. If you want to join our church, you don't just come down the aisle. You say, okay, good, we'll schedule you a time. You can go stay at the homeless shelter. You know what you find out? Church people who have come from other churches go, I'm not interested, thank you. The other people, you know what they do? They go, yeah, I've been there. I used to stay there sometimes on the weekends. And I'm, you know. And so what we're doing is we're ensuring that we are not taking life from other churches. Okay, now let me explain to you what ends up happening in church planters if you let these guys go through. If you let them go through and you don't hold them accountable, a lot of times what happens is it's somebody like me that's kind of a charismatic personality. Okay, they come along and they have this charismatic personality. And so there are people that are discontent in some way with their church. And so they come over to this guy's church,
Okay, and he starts sucking the very life out of this church, and then it goes into his church. Well, he gets called somewhere else. And because of his personality, the entire church revolves around his personality. That church dies, and that church dies. That's not church planting. Guys, I want you to hear me when I say this, because this is a huge, huge thing. We are not called to reshape the kingdom of God. We are called to further it. And if what we're doing in any mission, anywhere, is not furthering the kingdom of God, then we're not doing anything. And so it is our job at the 242 Network to have people come through assessment, train them, and walk with them, sharing with them the real way to reach people. Not just to go start a church, but to reach people. In rural Mississippi, church planting looks totally different. It's going to be a house for 5 years. It's going to be very slow. You're not going to market. Nobody's even going to know you're really there, except for the people in the community that you're reaching. It looks a lot different. The days of mega churches, the days of people coming in, planting churches, and they get 5,000, those days are over. Why? Because those people don't want to go to church. They have no interest in it whatsoever. And they're not just going to come because the building looks good. They're not. They're going to come because we go and intentionally reach out to those people. Did you know that on the Gulf Coast, and this was a statistic I got before I came down here, 85% of the Gulf Coast is unchurched. That means there are 15% in church. And guess what? That's not getting better. It's getting worse. So what does that mean? We've got to get intentional. And we've got to learn as local churches that people are not just going to walk through that door. Those days are over. Our generations are changing. And we got to go out there and get them. They're out there. The harvest is ready. But you've got to go and get them in there. And you know what I found out? And this is so good. We talked about this at lunch, at supper. When people don't come to church that aren't like you, don't come here, it is not because you don't welcome them. It is because they have preconceived ideas. They stereotype you. And so you know what you got to do? You got to go out there and show them stereotypes not real before they'll ever come into this church. You got to love them. You got to love them when they don't deserve to be loved. And then they go, why do you do this? Oh, funny you should ask. It's because Christ loved me. And so I want to encourage you. Get outside these walls. I drove up to this place and I grinned. Because I'm thinking this place is gravy for lost people. They're everywhere. And I was going, man, I would go there, and then we'd get there, and we'd go, and we'd just form relationships after relationships after relationship till everybody knew everybody. And then we'd say, hey, let's all get together. Why don't we do it in that building over there with the steeple? And they would. But it's going to cost some money sometimes, because that's the easy way, I can guarantee you. They follow the thief. Did you know that? They follow Satan. And he's a thief, and he's come to steal, kill, and destroy. So I can guarantee you those people over there are in the process of being stolen from, killed, or destroyed. So guess what we get to do? Show them love and restore. Why? Because that shows them Christ, and we pull them in. And that's what's going to have to happen for my son, who's in that generation that doesn't care about church. Now, he does, but that generation just doesn't. And it's dying off. 10 to 15 years, a lot of our churches are going to close their doors. Why? Because the builder generation, which some of you are in here, are of the builder generation, are still the life of the church. The boomers, they're like, you know what? Church is good if I get a chance to go. My generation, every now and then, but you got to show me something real, and it's got to be something I need personally in my life. The millennials and the Generation Z, I ain't got nothing to do with it, and I don't want anything to do with it. And something else both of these guys said, and I love it. They'll talk about Jesus all day long, but they won't talk about church. Why? Because church has a stigma. Guess what, guys? Listen to me. If you want your church to grow, you got to know they're not coming here. You got to go out there.
and do things. There are places these people go, crisis pregnancy centers, right? Food pantries, all these things that we can do to have people come to us. Overflow Church is on a circuit. You know how people do that, and if you've ever helped people, you understand that. They go to this person to ask for help, then they go to this person, then they go to this person, and five people have helped them by the time they get to us. And they say, we would like some help, we're hungry. And we go, you're on the circuit. But that's fine, we're going to help you anyway. Why? Because I want to talk to you. Come here. How are you? What's going on? Then they fall apart. We look for opportunities like crazy. In McGee, Mississippi, on average, we see about 30 people a week that are homeless, in addiction, or losing their kids. 30 people a week. Now, how did we get to a place we see 30 people a week? Because it took us years to get a reputation of our doors being open. That we're not going to offend people, we're not going to judge people, all those sorts of things. Because they thought that's who we were. We're just like every other church. Which every other church we found is not like that at all either. But they don't know that because some of our past haunts us. So, we open up that and we have all of those people coming in. And what we found out is this, that in my county, the county that I minister in, there are 12,000 people that claim no religious affiliation according to the census. I got 800 of them. We need to scratch the surface. Do you know how many people down here? A lot more than that. So how can you help? How can you support? Well, I got a guy right now. His name is James Cheatham. He wants to plant a church in Greenwood. And if you've ever been through Greenwood, you know it's a foreign country. Okay, there's nothing in Greenwood. And he wants to plant a church up there. We feel like God's called him. He's going to go through assessment in June. Maybe you could support him. He didn't have a church to send him. Maybe you can mother him. Because you guys get it. You understand cross-cultural differences. Or maybe just go out in this community, form ministries, get started reaching people in the community. Because what we found out is this. Your mission field here is a lot more people than a mission field overseas even sometimes. They're right here. They're right here. So I want to encourage you. Give to Margaret Lackey. Give to the cooperative program. Why? Because we're supporting church planters that are out there doing this thing. And they're going and they're alone and they're going into places with a bad rap because of church planters of the past. And pastors are looking at them like, we don't need another church. We don't, because they don't understand it. So my job as a director of 242 Network is to make you understand it ain't like it used to be. Pardon my grammar. Now we are trying our best to send people in that are wanting to engage unreached people. To change the culture. Because my baby girl is coming up in that culture, and I want to change it. So I'm going to put the gospel in it as much as I can. So, any questions that you have for me? Anything, any curiosity, kill the cat, or anything about just whatever? Any questions? I'll do this every time. Somebody's always got something. So, any questions that you have? Well, if you could listen, and that's what most people find, like my mom comes to my church every now and then, and she has to sit at the very front. She can't sit at the back because of distractions of the people all throughout the thing. She's like, what are they? It's very hard for people to understand that. They don't get that, but yeah. We generally very active. And another thing too, you know, preaching to those type of people is a lot different. It really is. You can't use certain words like redemption, salvation. Use different words that mean the same thing. Why? Because we don't use that vernacular. They don't talk like us. But God is blessing it. It's so cool to see happening. And what we're finding out is that the churches that are around us are thriving because of what the work God's doing at Overflow is thriving in their communities. Why? Because it's inspiring people to get out and do ministries. So right now, and I know I'm over, but so right now there's a church called Corinth Baptist Church. You might have heard of Corinth. It was when a tornado came through McGee a while back and wiped the church off the map. Well, when they rebuilt their church, they formed a team of carpenters that go all over the state and build things, okay, for people.
Okay, so, and then there's this church called Kennedy Springs. It's out in the Kennedy Springs community that has this place that has tons of clothes and items that you can go into and you pay like a nickel for it. Okay, it's just a mission. And so then we have the Methodist church, even though they're Methodists, we let them do their thing, but they give away food like crazy. Okay, and they're really good at that. So we handle putting people in rehab. We have connections with judges and police officers and rehabs and that sort of thing. So what we've learned is a community of churches. Now tell me, this isn't the gospel in Acts. What we've learned from a community of churches, somebody needs clothes. I got Miss Shirley from Kennedy Springs on the line, and they're going to get clothes from there. They're going to get food from here. Somebody needs a handicap ramp. They're coming to Corinth Baptist Church, and all of us are working together to change this community. Man, that's the gospel. And it doesn't get any better than that. Why? Because we chose to say we're not just going to sit by and watch. We're going to go out there where they are, and we're going to change communities. No, okay. Corinth Church. It's in McGee. Corinth Baptist Church. I'm sorry. Corinth is way on up there. South of Jackson, in between Jackson and Hattiesburg on 49. So not very far that way. My parents live in the Kill. And so that's where I'm staying while I'm down here. And I wanted to go fishing, but the wind is killing us. So, any other questions? Yes, ma'am. Okay, that's a great question. Everybody that we deal with, we have boundaries. I had to learn this the hard way. And I'm not like a regular pastor either because of who we deal with. And people don't understand that. Not a lot of my church members even know where I live. And the reason why is because my church member will show up at 3 o'clock in the morning constantly drunk, saying, "Help me." Okay, and I can't do that. And I can't do that not because of them, but my family. And my family comes first. They always will. They always have. Okay, now if I was single, I'm rolling. Okay, but because I have kids and because of my wife, I have to make sure that they are protected in that. There are certain things we don't allow to happen. You can't go in our church alone. Because I was telling somebody, my dad today, that he said, "I came by your church yesterday." And I was like, "Yeah." He said, "There was a guy sitting out front with a suitcase." I said, "Yeah, he's homeless waiting for somebody to come in." Okay, so you never show up with one person. You don't get out of your car. Okay, because there are people out there that might hurt you. Okay, and so a lot of people don't have my phone number. And I encourage people, don't give your phone number out. We have this thing called 8x8. And basically what that is you have a phone number on your phone. It's like a separate phone system. So we do take precautions, but at the same time, what I'm finding is that if you are in it to help them, you know, my wife was a home health nurse for years, and she would go into the worst neighborhoods you can possibly imagine, and with people that were in gangs, and they would, and I was like, "Don't you worry about that?" She said, No, you're there to help their grandmother. You're there to help their mom. They know, you know. And they also know that we're not going to tell on them. I have the police department call me constantly. "Do you know where so-and-so is?" And I was like, "I'm not telling you." Why? Because my job is to get them before you do. And they know that. We have that relationship. But so, yes, you're right. There is a risk in it, just like there's a risk in any mission. Like you go to Nairobi, you go to Amazon. But if God's called us to do it, you know, we kind of move through it and do that. But we do take precautions, a lot of precautions, to make sure we're doing it safely. Great question. Any others?
Do you work in county and state prisons?
We are in Wilkerson. We are in Parchman, Adams County, and then Simpson County Jail, Prentice Jail, all the little local jails, Smith County jails. But we have, there's a guy named Tony Bovell, actually, gave his property and his house away and moved into the transition house. And so he's over jail ministry, and he lives with the guys when they come out. So
this is the coolest thing ever, you know. And he's hardcore. He's an old Marine, and he walks with a big stick, and he's just a great guy, great guy. But and understand something. We have a lot of people that try to come to our church, especially now that we're so big. People try to come to our church that are church people that come from another church, and they just sit, and we won't allow that. You can't just come and sit. You have to do something. And so we go to them. What are you going to do? You can't just go. And it's so sad, but most church people, I don't want to do anything. I just want to sit. I can show you 45 other churches you can do that in. You're not going to do it here. Why? Because it costs air conditioning here. We don't have any money, and you're taking up our air conditioning. So I'm not that mean, but I'm, you know. So, but they get the point. Any other questions? Guys, thank y'all so much for allowing me to share with you. Thank you.